Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Angela Wilkins, Chief Data Officer at Starling Medical, a medical device company working on solutions within urinalysis. Angela joins the show today to share how she's evolved her career, which has spanned academia, venture, and more, into her new role at a startup. We also discuss the evolving intersection of data and healthcare and what the future holds for that industry. Angela, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Natalie, for having me.
I can't believe I haven't had you on the show before. I'm so excited. We have so much to talk about. I think it's we're talking at a really interesting time for you and your career, and we have a lot to get into, so let's get into it. But before we really dive into some of the specifics of what you're working on, let's talk about your career a little bit, because you've had such a layered career so far, touching all parts of the innovation machine here in Houston, from academia and venture to more. So what did you originally set out to do with your career, and how did it evolve into what you're doing now?
I really just wanted to be a scientist. Like, I learned about Einstein when I was like 8 years old, and that was the only thing I really wanted to be or do. And I actually really just imagined myself at a chalkboard, basically, deriving formulas. But like, when I started going in that direction, I started to realize you like had to use a computer to solve problems nowadays. And like, this led to me basically programming. And I easily fell in love with it because it was just like this way of, it was a new language, but it was also just kind of a way of like taking your ideas and making them more real. And I went from being like, a physicist to basically being at the Baylor College of Medicine. So I moved to Houston about 20 years ago. I've been here ever since. Love being here. But I moved into the healthcare field, and I really, really, really fell in love with biology and how people thought about it. It was such a wonderful time to be in that area too, because biology for the first time really was like becoming more mathematical. And so for 10 years, I ran around Baylor College of Medicine just solving any problem that anybody would let me, give me some data and let me try to solve.
Biology becoming mathematical is crazy, because it does seem like those are two separate subjects in high school. So when they intersect, it's really cool. And obviously that's really shaped your career. So how did that lead you to starting Mercury Data Science, which I love talking to you about, and some people might not know much about that organization and how you started it. So tell us that story.
I would say it really kind of like at Baylor, I had a lot of time and I had a lot of opportunities to learn how to use math to solve problems in biology. And essentially, AI was becoming a thing. Data science was becoming a thing. And the skill sets I learned at Baylor really actually transitioned into helping companies. And I kind of just started helping, some of the local startups, really just my friends. And then I met a few more people and realized it was an opportunity to actually start a company. And this company was started in collaboration with Mercury Fund. But at the beginning, we really focused on solving, helping these early startups basically build AI products. And at the time, this was kind of a new thing. So it was really exciting.
Yeah. What year was that? Because this was like way before.
This was, I think, 2017. Yeah. So yeah. Like it's, and I that's like now, like about 8 years ago, I was, yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, now obviously you've moved on from there. It's now called OmniScience and still doing a lot of that work in healthcare and more. So as an academic, both at BCM and then later at Rice, you're kind of working at this intersection of like tech meets academia. What was that like? And paint the picture for us.
Yeah. I think that one thing, the reason why I think I started out in the startup, I ended up kind of transitioning to the startup world, was because I actually felt a lot of frustration at Baylor College of Medicine. The things I would do wouldn't get used. It would just basically go into a paper. Hopefully somebody cited it. And I got a little frustrated with that. I wanted the things I do to like, people to actually use. And this, I think I saw like very early on in this ecosystem where like there was this just overall frustration that like, we do things they should make it into the world. And I think one of the reasons why I ended up back at Rice was because I could kind of see that, you know, Rice was ready for that. People were wanting that. The world was ready for it. And so, I mean, I think the one thing that stands out, like when I was at Rice, is like, there's so many wonderful, brilliant people there, and everybody's doing something super interesting, from healthcare to AI to operations research, material science, the environment. And it was an unusual opportunity to just see the world, because like Rice basically covers all the technologies that we kind of make in the world.
Well, I guess I almost want to ask, what needs to change? Because I feel like I've had this conversation before of like, you know, there's so much happening on campuses. How do we bring out that innovation into the world, and instead of, you know, just seeing it exist in papers from campuses? And you don't have to talk about the entirety of Rice and like, but as it pertains to what you worked on, you know, what needs to change to bring more innovation out of universities?
I do think you can basically go off the example that we've seen kind of work pretty well. It's like TMC Innovation, where they started bringing in entrepreneurs and residents. I don't think we're seeing enough of that across the ecosystem. I'm not even like just picking on Rice, but like if I were in charge, you know, it's like Rice, Baylor, MD Andersons would have entrepreneurs and residents basically hanging out, looking for the opportunities and helping everybody. At the end of the day, it's very hard for an academic to start a company. It's very hard for a student to start a company without a lot of help. And if we want companies to be successful, we need to take some of the, you know, the experienced people, you know, give them a bit of a paycheck and give them an opportunity to just kind of set in these places where we make technology and, you know, be there for it, for the situation.
That's such a great point and a great example to use TMC and what they're doing. Is it hard for Houston to like really bring out their entrepreneurs and residents because we're a bit more of a nascent innovation ecosystem? And like, is it hard to find people to bring them into universities, or do we think like maybe that's changing and maybe there's more opportunity, there's more successful entrepreneurs in Houston?
I think we could I 100% believe we could bring people here. I think, you know, we've seen TMC Innovation show that. We've seen them have successful companies come out of their entrepreneurs and residents. I think it's hard to explain the investment to some of the academic institutes that basically, you know, you're going to pay somebody to hang out and basically be an entrepreneur in residence. They don't necessarily understand the value immediately. I think you have to see it. You have to see that these people come in and basically teach. They're part of the ecosystem. And then basically they have the ability to when there's a make those relationships. And when there's a really great technology, or when there's 10 great technologies, they can help move those forward, whether or not they do it themselves or they help find people.
Well, you have had a foot on each side of that, from academia to the entrepreneurial side of things. So specifically with several startups that you worked as an advisor capacity, and you mentioned even just like the friend of startup founders, helping them in that way too. So what do you feel like, when you think of your work with different startups, what is it that you bring to the table? What do you really hope to like convey in your working with startups?
I think for me, like I bring kind of a long career in science and, you know, AI and computation, I'd actually say that like one of the things where I came into these technologies that are coming about, I was always really focused on use cases. Like, I don't use technology for the sake of technology. I'm trying to solve a problem. And I think one of the things is making sure that the startups are using AI and data and all these technologies for the right reason. Are you actually solving your problem, or are you just adding a buzzword to your pitch? I also think one of the things I think the experience of starting Mercury Data Science, I really learned how to start a company and how to think about it. And so, but because I was an academic first, I can kind of explain it to like academic terms, you know, and cause like you don't realize, you know, if you've never been involved with business, which is something I've, you know, fallen in love with a couple of years ago, it's a different language. And so when you first start hearing it, you're like, oh, this is all weird. Are they making this up? But after a while, it starts making sense. And I think I have the ability to explain it to the people the person I was 10 years ago.
Well, and you also have the venture side of things too, both with Mercury Data Science, starting with Mercury, and then you've also worked with First Byte Ventures here in Houston too. So you have that terminology too. Does that also help?
Yeah. And I have to say, working with First Byte was such a great experience. Veronica's such a great person and such a good person to bring it that, you know, coming into the ecosystem because she had a wide range of experiences that we don't get here. Because I think, you know, having the inside adventure I got from her, but I mean, she's worked at Tesla, Apple, so on. And so it's like I never got that kind of big commercial experience. And I really had an opportunity to learn through her.
You did recently transition your academia role into an advisor role into kind of more official capacity with Starling Medical. So tell us a little bit about how that opportunity came about and what your role is there.
About a year ago, I met the founders, Hannah and Drew, and I immediately just, you know, completely connected with them. They're such good founders, young, thoughtful people who heard the signal. They really picked up onto a good problem. And over the last, you know, year, I would talk with them when they, you know, when they needed some advice. And I think at some point it just, you know, it felt like the right thing to kind of like come help them solve their problem. And so Starling Medical is a company that has a device that goes in your toilet and measures what's going on with your urine. And it's like when I talk about this, it's like it's a device I could give you and you could go home and use right now. And like we've had successful pilot projects and it's been reimbursed by Medicare and insurance companies. And it's, you know, it was one of those things where like they're going to get a bunch of data soon and the opportunity is just there. And I was really, really excited to come on and kind of like build their AI platform, build the way that they're going to look at data.
Well, I think that's not something that a lot of people would think about when they just heard the pitch from Starling Medical, because I actually remember hearing a very early pitch from them and I was like, oh, cool, diagnostics, like that'll help some people with very specific health issues. But what you heard was they're going to have so much data from these diagnostics. So what does that actually mean to you? Like, take us through that thought process in terms of what that looks like for the future.
Yeah, I mean, the first indication they have gone over, we're going after is UTIs. And so we're really learning a particular, you know, niche problem at the beginning, but it's actually a niche problem that a lot of people have, you know, in this country, in this world. And, but as we navigate this first indication, we're going to start, you know, looking at other ways of, you know, other possible, you know, diagnostics, like, you know, things around cancer, nutrition, women's health. But that, you know, I knew immediately from talking with them that like, we're going to start one place, but where we end up is probably, you know, going to be completely different. And that this is the type of device that can help. This is the type of device that can help lots of different people.
Well, I think what's also interesting and kind of a good testament to Starling's growth is that, you know, you're the chief data officer, and I'm not quite sure, but that seems like a hire that is, you know, a pretty big milestone to be able to reach a part in the company's growth to be able to hire somebody on for that. So tell us about, you know, where Starling Medical is today and what's kind of on their radar to accomplish in the near future.
I think right now, right now, we have a lot of people who want the device and we have to make it and we need to scale. I feel so lucky to be involved with this team because they've all really stuck together the last couple of years and they've made a device that basically people want. They have product market fit, a thing that we all like talk about. And I'm coming into the situation, I feel kind of spoiled because like I'm just ready to make stuff. Like I don't have to like go through all the hard work that they've done for 5 years trying to figure out this stuff. When we talk about where we're at, it's one of those we're going to burn it up. Like, it's going to be great. Like, it's, we're going to make a lot of stuff, and hopefully people will be using it now soon.
What's been the biggest either surprise or benefit for you personally to like make that transition from the academic world to the startup world?
Oh,
you've always been in the startup world, but I mean, like, to work on a startup team.
I would think, So I think going from academic to startup, academic back to startup, I really learned how to partner with those institutions. Like, I think one of the things, one of my favorite things at Rice I would do is work with hospitals. And I've learned how to, you know, how you make that bridge. And so I think that's one of the things that, I think that's one of the challenges that startups have also. I think there's a lot, because we don't, your first company, you don't know really how to make that bridge and how to use it to basically have impact. And I think, you know, they've done a really good job, but like, it's one of, you know, one of my roles is to help do that. And I think that's one of the things that really actually, like when we talk about the Houston ecosystem, it's something we should be doing better at, because we have so many startups and we have so many places that would like to use better technology to solve problems.
I think that's something we might forget a little bit when we're thinking of startups and their growth and how important hires are. Like, it's not just, you have to hire somebody who's really good at doing that one job that they will be doing, but it's like, for you, you made sense in this capacity because you have history and data and healthcare. You also have all of these connections. So I feel like that's something I feel like I don't think about when I think of startups making these key hires. It's like, you have to like, they have to be like an and person. Like, they have this, 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 and this, like, to offer, right?
Well, and I mean, and it's partly just the history of being here for as long as they did, but like, it's like one of those things where I can nudge a friend and be like, hey, can I get an introduction to these three people? You know, I know how to find, you know, who I need, and then I know who I should talk to get to that person. And I know that, I got to tell you, that is not something I knew 10 years ago.
Well, I think what's so interesting to talk to you about too is this intersection of data and healthcare, because it is such an interesting intersection and it has evolved a lot over the past decade. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about that niche industry, I guess, and any trends we should know about and like what's going to make a difference in when it comes to data and healthcare.
I think when it comes to back to the data and healthcare, it really is like collaboration and working together. I think we're starting to realize that our little, you know, the data that we have in our hospital is not necessarily enough, and it's only more powerful if we work with everybody else. It's figuring out how to share information without sharing information in some way. Like, you know, it's like we need to, you know, follow HIPAA, but like, how do we share information in a way that we can all help each other without, you know, violating any protocols, making anybody worried about privacy? And I think in the case of healthcare, you know, it actually goes back to working with Baylor like 15 years ago. And I'm like, 200, you know, data on 200 patients is not enough to solve, you know, figure out how a disease works. You know, you really do need a lot of data to understand disease. And that's only going to happen through sharing.
Well, it's such a complicated issue. And I'm just wondering who needs to make the biggest moves. Is it big tech? Is it the hospitals?
I've seen one solution that's kind of interesting. There's a company, I think they're in Chicago, called TriNext. What they've done is they create free infrastructure for like clinicians and hospitals and stuff like that. And if you put your data on their platform, they like, you know, provide some value to you, quality checks, things like that. But at the end of the day, if you do that, you actually gain access to everybody else's data on the platform. And then they have some sort of business model of how they make money through, like, I don't know, pharma. But it's, at this point, I think they have hundreds of institutions on this platform. And through this, it's the largest aggregated group of data I know of.
I'm glad your answer wasn't big tech, but I do feel like they also will have a role to play in this.
You know what? But at the end of the day, it's not big tech. Like, it's not in their it doesn't fit their business model to solve this problem. Amazon wants to make money off the cloud and selling things off Amazon. Google wants to make things off, you know, money off search and off their cloud services. And same for Microsoft. You know, it's like, I think they will enable us, but to solve a problem like this, this has to be a problem that you own. And it's the only problem you have. It's too big of a problem. And it's too, the solution has the ability to change the way we look at healthcare.
I guess I was thinking about it almost from like the personal data side of things, which obviously there fits their business model. And I guess that's why where like my head went when I almost feel like there's a perception problem about sharing data, because we've been told for so long that it's so Apple and Amazon, they all have, and Google, they all have access to so much of our data. And like, that's scary for some reason. I mean, I guess it is scary, but like, does that affect the like healthcare data world that there's like this negative perception around sharing data?
Yeah, it does. Like there was a conversation I had recently with a hospital, like just a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about just generally in a group of people about like how it would be great if we had some sort of large language model that basically came from the Texas Medical Center. And that person immediately pulled back. And this is the person who's in charge of that, making that decision at a hospital. And he was very, very concerned at privacy. But like, there's part of me that's sitting there going like, if we did that, you know, it's in everybody's advantage that if we could figure out a way of doing it, you know, it would basically create a tool that would really be helpful for all of us. And yeah, it's still there. I think there's ways around it. There's lots of technology out there that lets you hide that personal information, but be able to still use it. I think we need time to adjust, but I do think we're heading in a direction where there's going to be ways to share information that will make everybody feel comfortable. But I do think it's a cultural change for everyone to accept it.
Well, and this might be, that might be your answer for this too. But one thing I love asking people is that like standard, what keeps you up at night type of question. And for you, I'm wondering like, when it comes to the impact of data and the intersection with life sciences, what are you closely keeping an eye on that could really affect Starling Medical or other, you know, Houston startups that are working in this space? What would be like something that would be really bad to happen or really good?
Let me see. I think a lot of like what could have happened better is reimbursement, the insurance companies. To me, if there's one thing that could change healthcare, is if insurance companies saw the value in preventative healthcare and were willing to pay for it. I think we spend a lot of time trying to cure diseases, and we need to spend just as much time preventing them. And right now, the way pharma works, the way insurance companies work, it's not in their advantage to have preventative care. And I think that's actually one of the reasons where I really liked Starling was it is like one of the best ways I've ever heard of getting, you know, data on a daily basis that, you know, is biological. It's not how I talk or anything. It's like literally kind of biology data that can be collected passively throughout your life. And I think we're going to see more of that. But on some level, how that gets paid for by the system is still being sorted out. But when that happens, I think that's really going to change how healthcare works.
I think that's a great answer and also a great point, even beyond data, because it almost feels like that's like an US problem a little bit too. Like, are other countries have more of a preventative medicine focus? Is that right? Or is that, am I misunderstanding?
I do think they have more. And I think it comes down to like how the system works. Because in a day, if the government picks up the bill, they care about preventative healthcare. But when we have everything's kind of fragmented and we have lobbyists and we have, you know, it's, it's, There's good and bad. And, but I actually think long term, in the next decade, we're going to see that shift towards preventative healthcare.
When it comes to thinking about like AI in general, you also have a role at the AI Advisory Council for the State of Texas. So what does that encompass and what's the mission of that group?
Well, at the end of the day, is the mission is to put together a report, a strategy on how we think Texas should think about AI. And right now, a lot of states are doing this, that they're basically, you know, like us, we're doing an overview of what it's, you know, how is the state using AI? How do they want to use the AI? What do they need to use AI? Because I think, you know, it's beyond just like using an algorithm. They need infrastructure. They need a way. They need money. They need people who will move it. And so it's not as simple as picking out a technology and whether or not you can use it. It's like, is there anybody to pick up the phone if anything, you know, happens? Right now we're just going through all the various, I've never learned so much about the government and how it works than I do right now. And, but we meet on a regular basis, and at some point we'll start, you know, having work groups and talking with more people and be putting together how we think Texas should move forward. I think I was telling you this before, is like Colorado passed some pretty serious regulation a couple of weeks ago, and that in 2 years, you know, basically if you're going to use AI, in this case, they have a particular focus where they called it like AI high risk. And AI high risk was basically if you're going to use it in a way that could affect somebody's economic, financial, or health status in some way, you have to basically make sure it's fair and it's compliant. And though I don't have any idea how they're going to do that, basically, it's not a whole other problem. But in 2 years, there's going to be an expectation in this state that, you know, you're almost going to have to do an FDA for the AI.
Okay, well, I mean, that doesn't sound bad.
No, it's just hard.
Yeah. And just like also thinking about, because, you know, obviously, and you mentioned this to me before too, like that leader is going to really be setting a precedent, you know, this Colorado legislation is setting a precedent as we speak. And so Texas has got to keep an eye on that. And then subsequently, companies and startups in Texas working in AI are going to have to keep an eye on that.
And you are seeing a lot of, I talk a lot with companies of all sizes about this, and it is something that they're not sure what to think, but they know that they have to think about it. And it's, you know, we're still a couple of years away from it, but yeah, I mean, the FDA of AI sounds great, right? Like, it's like, you know, we should be, I mean, we should have technology to be double checked to make sure we're applying it in a way that is fair across every, you know, across all demographics. It's just obvious that we should do that. It's just, it's also very hard. How do we define bias? How do we define high risk? How do we, you know, let's say we have a solution. How do we know it works?
Unfortunately, it does feel like we're building the plane while we're flying it, because
that's a kind of fun to watch.
But not as a passenger if you're on that plane, I guess. Not super fun, but.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And but at the same time, you know, the FDA has been regulating AI for the last 20 years. And, you know, it's, I'm sure it was slow and hard, but like, you know, it is possible with resources.
Yes. And the right people. Yeah. The decision. So I guess to kind of wrap up our conversation, I wanted to circle back to like how we've talked about how you've had these different roles within the Houston innovation ecosystem. You've been here, as you mentioned, for about 20 years, which is pretty much the entirety of Houston's like push to become an innovative ecosystem for startups and tech companies. So how have you observed the city's progress from your various positions in the ecosystem? Are you an optimist about, you know, Houston really kind of connecting its dots to becoming a startup hub?
Yeah, I mean, You know, it's funny. For me, my entire life, I'm surrounded by startup people. I already feel like we are. But like, I know it might be small, but like, you know, the people I'm around, it's intense. Like, this is what we do. And so, you know, I also see, I think one of the things is like I've seen happen is with the young people. Like, it's like, you know, it's because I've been around it for 20 years. And like, you know, a lot of times we've been looking for the institutes, like, you know, the organizations like Rice and TMC to fix this stuff. And I think one of the things, you know, I see a lot of more like grassroots, like, we're going to fix this. Like, we can't wait for them to figure it out anymore. And I think you know what I'm talking about. So you see all these, you know, with organizations that happen within us that have nothing to do with the big guys. And I think that is the best thing I've seen is that we'll, you know, just not, you know, we'll create our own little society.
Well, and I think, I mean, I ask that question a lot. I get every answer under the sun. And I really do feel like sometimes it just depends on which industry the person I'm talking to is in. And because you're so right, like the health tech world of Houston is, it might be small, but it doesn't really feel small when you really like are looking at all the different companies, all the different people who start here, move here, come to the TMC innovation world and everything. But yeah, it does feel like definitely Houston's got a hold on its healthcare innovation.
I think one of the things we're seeing is, I mean, essentially, like, I think one of the challenges we've had is that the people here, the people who start companies aren't necessarily the ones who get to end it. And I think that's one of the things that we're seeing is, like, the people who start these companies, the people who are the CEO, I think we're going to get to see them finish it all the way through. And I think when that happens, that's going to help us a lot.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And yeah, usually when I talk to startup CEOs, they're usually the founders because they're early stage, but that doesn't always stay the same, and for better or for worse.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing more talent that can basically grow with the company. Mm-hmm. They can be there at the end.
For you, not being a Houston native, do you feel like you're passionate about Houston's driving innovation here in Houston? Has Houston won you over?
I don't know. I Houston won me over when I was in like eighth grade and I went to the Opera House here. I've always wanted to come back here. Like I love Houston. It's there's something about it for me. I want a big city. I want to be in the South. I like diversity. I like science. You know, it's like I think I retire here.
Well, I agree in so many different ways. I am a Houston native, but yeah, what more do we need that Houston doesn't have for us as citizens, as, you know, innovators? It's great. And I feel like we got to put that on a bumper sticker or something, that you can throw a rock in Houston and hit a smart person. I think that's a good one. That's our new city tagline.
Well, and Natalie, you've done so much for the ecosystem, making sure we're aware of each other, because you know how easily we could silo off. I think that's one of the things is like when we talk about it, it's like, I know that we have these wonderful niches, but it's because I know about them. And, you know, you do such a great job of making sure we're all connected.
Yeah, well, that's always been a big challenge for Houston, is breaking down those silos. So I'm glad to help in the way that I can with Innovation Map. So thank you for that. And thank you for the chat today, because I feel like we covered a lot of stuff that I think I mentioned this at some point. We don't really have that necessarily that data focused mind. And it's always interesting when I get to talk to you and see how your mind works and hear a little bit about like the data behind everything, which is so important. So thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you for having me. And if you could somehow make me sound like Lauren Bacall, I would really like it.
We'll do our best. We'll do our best.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.